The Coral Island, from Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia at en.wikipedia.org. The Coral Island, A Tale of the Pacific Ocean, 1858, is a novel written by Scottish author R.M. Ballantyne, one of the first works of juvenile fiction to feature exclusively juvenile heroes. The story relates the adventures of three boys marooned on a South Pacific island, the only survivors of a shipwreck. A typical Robinsonette, a genre of fiction inspired by Daniel Defoe's Robinson Crusoe, and one of the most popular of its type, the book first went on sale in late 1857 and has never been out of print. Among the novel's major themes are the civilizing effect of Christianity, 19th century British imperialism in the South Pacific, and the importance of hierarchy and leadership. It was the inspiration for William Golding's dystopian novel Lord of the Flies, 1954, which inverted the morality of the Coral Island. In Ballantyne's story, the children encounter evil, but in Lord of the Flies, evil is within them. The novel was considered a classic for primary school children of the early 20th century in Britain, and in the United States, it was a staple of suggested reading lists for high school students. Modern critics consider The Coral Island to feature a dated, imperialist view of the world, but although it is less popular today than it once was, it was adapted into a four-part children's television drama broadcast by ITV in 2000. Contents. Section 1 Background, 1.1 Biographical Background and Publication, 1.2 Literary and Historical Context, Section 2 Plot Summary, Section 3 Genre and Style, Section 4 Themes, Section 5 Critical Reception, Section 6 Influence, Section 7 Adaptations, Section 8 References, Section 9 External Links. Section 1 Background, 1.1 Biographical Background and Publication. Born and raised in Edinburgh in 1825, Ballantyne was the ninth of 10 children and the youngest son. He was tutored by his mother and sisters. His only formal education was a brief period at Edinburgh Academy in 1825-37. At the age of 16, he travelled to Canada, where he spent 5 years working for the Hudson's Bay Company, trading with the Native Americans for furs. He returned to Scotland in 1847 and for some years worked for the publisher Messrs. Constable, first as a clerk and then as a partner in the business. During his time in Canada, he had helped to pass the time by writing long letters to his mother, to which he attributed whatever small amount of facility in composition he may have acquired, and began his first book. Ballantyne's Canadian experiences formed the basis of his first novel, The Young Fur Traders, published in 1856, the year he decided to become a full-time writer and embarked on the adventure stories for the young with which his name is popularly associated. Ballantyne never visited the Coral Islands of the South Pacific, relying instead on the accounts of others that were then beginning to emerge in Britain, which he execrated for theatrical effect by including plenty of gore and violence meant to titillate his juvenile leadership. His ignorance of the South Pacific caused him to erroneously describe coconuts as being soft and easily opened. A stickler for accuracy, he resolved that in future, whenever possible, he would write only about things he had personal experience of. Ballantyne wrote The Coral Island while staying in a house on the Burnstan seafront opposite Edinburgh on the 4th of 5. According to Ballantyne, biographer Eddie Kell, he borrowed extensively from an 1852 novel by the American author James F. Bowman, The Island Home. He also borrowed from John Williams' narrative of Missionary Enterprises, 1837. To the extent that cultural historian Rod Edmund has suggested, Ballantyne must have written one chapter of The Coral Island with Williams' book open in front of him, so similar is the text. Edmund describes the novel as a fruit cocktail of other writing about the Pacific, adding that by modern standards, Ballantyne's plagiarism in The Coral Island is startling. Although the first edition is dated 1858, it was on sale in bookshops from early December 1857. Dating books forward was a common practice at the time, especially during the Christmas period, to preserve their newness into the new year. The Coral Island is Ballantyne's second novel and has never been out of print. He was an exceedingly prolific author who wrote more than 100 books in his 40-year career. According to professor and author John Rainey Sartre, Ballantyne had a deep religious conviction and felt it his duty to educate Victorian middle-class boys, his target audience, in codes of honor, decency, and religiosity. The first edition of The Coral Island was published by T. Nelson and Sons, who in common with many other publishers of the time had a policy, when accepting a manuscript, of buying the copyright from the author rather than by paying royalties. As a result, authors generally did not receive any income from the sale of subsequent editions. Ballantyne received between £50 and £60, equivalent to about £5,800 as of 2012. But when the novel's popularity became evident and the number of editions increased, he tried unsuccessfully to buy back the copyright. He wrote bitterly to Nelson's in 1893 about the copyrights they held on his books, while he had earned nothing for 38 years, reaped the whole profits. The Coral Island, still considered a classic, was republished by Penguin Books in 1995 in the Popular Classic series. 1.2. Literary and Historical Context. Published during the first golden age of children's fiction, The Coral Island began a trend in boys' fiction by using boys as the main characters, a device now commonplace in the genre. It preserves, according to literary critic Minnie Singh, the moralizing aspects of didactic texts, but does so, and in this regard it is a founding text by the congruence of subject and implied reader. The story is about boys and written retrospectively as though by a boy for an audience of boys. According to literary critic Frank Kermode, The Coral Island could be used as a document in the history of ideas. A scientific and social background for the novel is found in Darwinism, of the natural and the social kind. For instance, Charles Darwin's 1842, The Structure and Distribution of Coral Reefs, was one of the best-known contemporary accounts of the growth of coral. Published a year before Darwin's Origin of Species, whose ideas were already being circulated and discussed widely, The Coral Island reflects the then prevalent view of evolutionary theory. The Victorian age based its imperialist ideology in part on the idea that evolution had resulted in white English superiority that was anchored in the notion of a civilized nation elected by God to rule inferior peoples. Ballantyne had been reading books by Darwin and by his rival Alfred Russel Wallace. In later publications, he also acknowledged the naturalist Henry York Forbes. The interest in evolutionary theory was reflected in much contemporary popular literature, and social Darwinism was an important factor contributing to the old view of the Victorians and their empire building. Section 2. Plot Summary. The story is written as a first personality from the perspective of 15-year-old Ralph Rover, one of three boys shipwrecked on the coral reef of a large but uninhabited Polynesian island. Ralph tells the story retrospectively, looking back on his boyhood adventure. "I was a boy when I went through the wonderful adventures here in said town. With the memory of my boys' feelings strong upon me, I present my book specially to boys, in the earnest hope that they may derive valuable information, much pleasure, great profit, and unbounded amusement from its pages." The account starts briskly. Only 4 pages are devoted to Ralph's early life and a further 14 to his voyage to the Pacific Ocean on board the Arrow. He and his two companions, 18-year-old Jack Martin and 13-year-old Peregrin Gay, are the sole survivors of the shipwreck. The narrative is in 2 parts. The first describes how the boys feed themselves, what they drink, the clothing and shelter they fasten, and how they cope with having to rely on their own resources. The second half of the novel is more action-packed, featuring conflicts with pirates, fighting between the native Polynesians and the conversion efforts of Christian missionaries. Fruit fees and wild pigs provide plentiful food, and at first the boys' life on the island is idyllic. They build a shelter and construct a small boat using their only possessions, a broken telescope, an iron-bound oar, and a small axe. Their first contact with other humans come after several months when they observe 2 large outrigger canoes in the distance, one pursued by the other. The 2 groups of Polynesians disembark on the beach and engage in battle. The victors take 15 prisoners and kill and eat one immediately. But when they threaten to kill one of the 3 women captured along with 2 children, the boys intervene to defeat the pursuers, earning from the gratitude of the chief Tararo. The next morning, they prevent another act of cannibalism. The natives leap and the boys are alone once more. More unwelcome visitors then arrive in the shape of British pirates who make living by trading or stealing sandalwood. The three boys hide in a cave, but Ralph is captured when he ventures out to see if the intruders have left and is taken on board the pirate schooner. He strikes up a friendship with one of the crew, Bloody Bill, and when the ship calls at the island of Emu to trade for more wood, Ralph experiences many facets of the island's culture. The popular sport of surfing, the sacrificing of babies to ill gods, rape, and cannibalism. Rising tensions result in the inhabitants attacking the pirates, leaving only Ralph and Bloody Bill alive. The pair succeed in making the escape in the schooner, but Bill is mortally wounded. He makes a deathbed repentance for his evil life, leaving Ralph to sail back to the Coral Island alone, where he is reunited with his friends. The three boys sail to the island of Mango, where a missionary has converted some of the population to Christianity. There they once again meet Tarado, whose daughter Avithya wishes to become a Christian against her father's wishes. The boys attempt to take Avithya in a small boat to a nearby island, the chief of which has been converted. But en route, they are overtaken by one of the Tarado's war canoes and taken prisoner. They are released a month later after the arrival of another missionary and Tarado's conversion to Christianity. The false gods of Mango are consigned to the flames, and the boys set sail for home, older and wiser. They return as adults for another adventure in Ballantyne's 1861 novel, The Gorilla Hunters, a sequel to The Coral Island. This section contains an image file with the caption, Jack, Ralph, and Peterkin after reaching the island, from an 1884 edition of the novel. Section 3, Genre and Style. This section contains an image file with the text, Ralph and Bloody Bill making the escape on board the pirate schooner, from an 1884 edition of the novel. All Ballantyne's novels are, in his own words, adventure stories for young folks, and The Coral Island is no exception. It is a Robinsonade, a genre of fiction inspired by Daniel Defoe's Robinson Crusoe, 1719, one of the most popular of its type, and one of the first works of juvenile fiction to feature exclusively juvenile heroes. Susan Maher, professor of English, notes that in comparison to Robinson Crusoe, such books generally replace some of the original's romance with a pedestrian realism, exemplified by works such as The Coral Island and Frederick Smarret's 1841 novel Masterman Ready, or The Wreck of the Pacific. Romance, with its attention to character development, was only restored to the genre of boys' fiction with Robert Louis Stevenson's Treasure Island, argues literary critic Lisa Honka. The Coral Island, for all its adventure, is greatly occupied the realism of domestic fiction. Ballantyne devotes about a third of the book to descriptions of the boys' living arrangements. The book exhibits a light-hearted confidence in his description of an adventure that was above all fun. As Ralph says in his preface, if there is any boy or man who loves to be melancholy and morose, and who cannot enter with kindly sympathy into the regions of fun, let me seriously advise him to shut my book and put it away. It is not meant for him. Professor of English M. Daphne Kutzer has observed that the swift movement of the story from coastal England to exotic Pacific Island is similar to the swift movement from the real world to the fantastic in children's fantasy. To a modern reader, Ballantyne's books can seem overly concerned with accounts of flora and fauna, an ethnographic gloss intended to suggest that their settings are real places offering adventures to those who can reach them. They can also seem obtrusively pious, but according to John Renisart, the moral tone of Ballantyne's writing is compensated for by his ability to tell a cracking good yarn in an accessible and well-fashioned prose style. Section 4, Themes. The major themes of the novel revolve around the influence of Christianity, the importance of social hierarchies, and the inherent superiority of civilized Europeans over the South Sea Islanders. Martin Luther, professor of England, considers the novel a key text mapping out colonial relations in the Victorian period. The basic subject of the novel is popular and widespread: castaway children assuming adult responsibilities without adult supervision, and The Coral Island is considered the classic example of such a book. The supported civilizing influence of missionaries in spreading Christianity among the natives of South Seas is an important theme of the second half of the story. As Jack remarks to Peterkin, All the natives of South Seal Islands are fierce cannibals, and they have little respect for strangers. Modern critics view this aspect of the novel less benevolently. Jerry Phillips, in a 1995 article, sees in the Coral Island the perfect realization of the official discourse of 19th century Pacific imperialism, which he argues was obsessed with the purity of God, trade, and the nation. The importance of hierarchy and leadership is also a significant element. The overarching hierarchy of race is informed by the Victorian concepts, influenced by the new theories of evolution proposed by Darwin and others. In morals and culture, the natives are placed lower on the evolutionary ladder than are Europeans, as is evidenced in the battle over the native woman Avithia, which pits the force of civilization versus the force of cannibalism. Another hierarchy is seen in the organization of the boys. Although Jack, Ralph, and Peterkin each have a say in how they should organize themselves, ultimately the younger boys defer to Jack, a natural leader, particularly in a crisis forming a natural hierarchy. The pirates also have a hierarchy, but one without democracy, and as a consequence are wiped out. The hierarchy of the natives is imposed by the savagery. Valentine's message is that leaders should be respected by those they lead and govern with the consent. This educational message is especially appropriate considering Valentine's adolescent audience, the future rulers of the world. Modern critics find darker undertones in the novel. In an essay published in College English in 2001, Martin Duthel states that the Coral Island can be thought of as epitomizing a move away from the confidence and optimism of the early Victorian proponents of British imperialism towards self-consciousness and anxiety about colonial domination. She locates this anxiety in what she calls the rhetoric of excess that features in the descriptions of cannibalism and especially in the counts of Fijian savagery provided by Bloody Bill, most notably that of the sacrifice of children to the ill gods, and the missionary, a representative of the London Missionary Society, an emblematic figure of colonial fiction. Others have also linked popular boys' fiction of the period with imperialism. Joseph Bristow's Empire's Boys 1991 claimed to see an imperialist manhood which shaped British attitudes towards empire and masculinity. The novel's portrayal of Pacific culture and the effects of colonialism are analyzed in studies such as Bryan's Streets, The Savage in Literature, Representation of Primitive Society in English Fiction 1975, and Rod Edmonds representing the South Pacific colonial discourse from Cook to Gauguin 1998. The domination imposed by geographical mapping of a territory and policing of its native inhabitants is an important theme in the novel, both specifically and in general in the topography of the island as mapped by the boys and the South Pacific's eventual subjugation and conversion to Christianity, a topic continued in Stevenson Treasure Island. The exploration of the relationship between nature and evangelical Christianity is another typically Victorian theme. Coral connects the two ideas. Literary critic Catherine Anderson explains that coral jewelry popular in the period had a pious significance. The enchanted garden of coral the boys discover at the bottom of the island's lagoon is a suggestive of missionary encounters with the societies of the Pacific island. In Victorian society, coral had been given an evangelical framing, and the little coral insect responsible for building coral reefs mirrored the child reader's productive capacity as a fundraiser for the missionary cause. Literary critic Mitchell Ellery discusses numerous children's books from the early to mid-19th century, including The Coral Island, in which coral plays such an educational role. The novel setting provides the backdrop for a meditation in the style of Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who promoted an educational setting in which lessons are provided by direct interaction with the natural world rather than by books and coercive teachers. Singh points out that Rousseau in Imlay or on Education promotes the reading and even imitation of Robinson Crusoe. Literary critic Fiona McCulloch argues that the unmediated knowledge the boys gain on the Coral Island resembles the Drake language for children Rousseau advocates in Imlay. This section contains a quote, "I said that these inhuman monsters were actually launching the canoe over the living bodies of the victims. But there was no pity in the breasts of these men. Forward they went in ruthless indifference, shouting as they went, while high above their voices rang the dying shrieks of those wretched creatures as, one after another, the ponderous canoe passed over them, burst the eyeballs from their sockets, and sent the lifeblood gushing from their mouths. O reader, this is no fiction. I would not, for the sake of thrilling you with horror and then so terrible a sin. It was witness. It is true, true as an accursed sin which has rendered the human heart capable of such diabolical enormities. End quote. Section 5. Critical Reception. The Coral Island was an almost instant success and was translated into almost every European language within 50 years of its publication. It was widely admired by its contemporary readers, although modern critics view the text as featuring dated colonialist themes and arguably racist undertones. Ballantyne's blend of bloodthirsty adventure and pious imperialism appealed not just to his target juvenile audience but also to their parents and teachers. He is today mainly remembered for The Coral Island, to the exclusion of much of his other work. The novel was still considered a classic for the English elementary school children in the early 20th century. In the United States, it was long a staple of suggested reading lists for high school students. Such a list, discussed in a 1915 article in the English Journal, recommends the novel in the category Stories for Boys in His Style. A simplified adaptation of the book was recommended in the 1950s for 12 to 14 years old. Although mostly neglected by modern scholars and generally considered to be dated in many aspects, in 2006 it was voted one of the top 20 Scottish novels as the 15th International Worldwide Wave Conference. Section 6. Influence. Robert Louis Stevenson's 1882 novel Treasure Island was in part inspired by The Coral Island, which he admired for its better qualities, as was James Barrie's character Peter Pan. Both Stevenson and Barrie had been fervent boy readers of the novel. Novelist G.A. Henty was also influenced by Ballantyne's audience-friendly method of didactism. William Golding's 1954 novel Lord of the Flies was written as a counterpoint to or even a parody of The Coral Island, and Golding makes explicit reference to it. At the end of the novel, for instance, one of the naval officers who rescues the children mentions the book, commenting on the hunt for one of the number, Ralph, as jolly good soul, like The Coral Island. Jack also makes an appearance in The Lord of the Flies as Jack Merideau, representing the irrational nature of the boys. Indeed, Golding's three central characters, Ralph, Piggy, and Jack, are caricatures of Ballantyne's heroes. Despite having enjoyed The Coral Island many times as a child, Golding strongly disagreed with the views that it espoused, and in contrast, Lord of the Flies depicts the English boys as savages themselves, who forget more than they learn, unlike Ballantyne's boys. Golding described the relationship between the two books by saying that Coral Island wrote it to compost in his mind, and in the compost a new myth put down roots. Neither is the idyllic nature of Ballantyne's Coral Island to be found on Stevenson's Treasure Island, which is unsuitable for settlement, but exists merely as a site from which to examine treasure, a view consistent with the late Victorian imperial mission, according to Honaker. Section 7. Adaptations. The Coral Island was adapted into a children television series in a joint venture between Thames Television and the Australian Broadcasting Corporation in 1980, first shown on British television in 1983. It was also adapted into a four-part children's television drama by Zenith Productions, broadcast by ITV in 2000. Please refer to the article for Section 8 references and Section 9 external links. These sound files and all the text in the article are licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 unported license, available at http://creativecommons.org/licenses/by-sa/3.0.